Well, this is going to be an experiment because I'm holding my microphone on my stomach in front of me.
Okay.
There aren't really any desks or anything. So I'm sitting in a chair that I believe was stolen from an elementary school, next to a bed where my laptop is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that comfy?
less comfortable than my desk, but unfortunately that's still in the fiery dungeon.
Do we want to mention your fiery dungeon? And that's not a euphemism for anything you newlyweds are doing.
It's kind of a euphemism. I mean, it's not so much a dungeon per se. I wouldn't call my office a dungeon, although it is occasionally torturous. Rimshot.
Oh. Okay. Well, I guess
because of work and stuff.
It can swing one way or the other. Yeah, I can see how that would, you know, the work could dominate your day. Yeah.
No leather allowed in the office, though.
Oh God, no! It's too hot.
It's far too hot. Yes. So yeah, my air conditioner broke in my house Monday night. It is currently Wednesday night. I've lost all concept of time. I have no idea.
Yeah, you've kind of had to live out of a car / places that you wander into for a couple days now. So it's a little disorienting.
We're currently spending the evenings at Amanda's parents' house, a couple miles away. But yeah, during the daytime, it's like, well, I just feel like a vagrant wandering the streets. We spent some time at Target today. We went to the mall yesterday. You know, various other air-conditioned places where we wander aimlessly and buy some things after a little while.
That's exciting.
That's pretty much how my week is going. How's your week?
Busy, crazy, wacky week. It's bananas.
So. Is it good bananas or bad bananas?
Well,
bananas aren't frequently good, I guess.
Well, I you know, it'd be like comparing apples to bananas, because I was up at San Francisco. Fancy.
That's right. How did all that go?
Yeah, it's still dirty and gross and weird and congested and...
You take that back.
Your personal safety feels threatened. So it's a peculiar place. But I had a lot of fun. I only went up for Thursday and Friday because I was just like, well, I have a wedding that I'm supposed to go to in Carmel Valley in near Monterey. And so I was just like, so why don't I just go up and see people and do things? Because everyone shows up in town for that.
And you saw people and you said hello and somebody awkwardly hugged you, apparently?
Oh, two people. Because see what happened? Well, more than two people, but two people in one instance where I got the analog sandwich. I got a... Mr.
Is that a euphemism?
No. God, no. And I got iMic on one side and Casey List on the other, and I was just smooshed in between. So that there was that.
But you did fail my request to kiss Matt Alexander's head on Snapchat.
Yes.
Why? Defend yourself.
Because gross. Yuck.
Too much human contact for you?
Yeah. Yeah, nasty. And, you know, I'm fairly certain, even with the limited human contact that I had, that I picked up some sort of horrible ailment that sort of kicked in Tuesday morning and has been really improving my work week since I've come back and gone to work.
You sure it's not like an allergy thing? Because you were in a lot of nature up there.
No, because now I'm not in nature, and... I'm just popping them Sudafeds, you know, the Mucinex D and it's got the extra, you know, the ID stuff. Yeah. You know, you're familiar. Breaking Bad.
Yeah, those are good. Mm-hmm. Those are helpful from time to time.
I try not to take them because, I stay up all night, like last night, and then I can't really sleep, but you know, you need to be on your A game really when you come back to work and there is a situation of needing a lot of work done. And so that's exciting. It's been really just all up and down.
But all in all, you had a good time up there in San Francisco and the various places in middle of California.
Yeah, I met Afwaller.
I don't think that's actually how you pronounce it.
No, I don't think so either. It's Afwaller. So he was there, and I met Doug Beal, who is frequently hanging around Relay and the whatnots, and sometimes in our chat room, if it's not too late at night, and it's usually too late at night. And so he was there.
I think
there.
His ghost is usually in there regardless.
And we had pizza, and Afwaller was very generous with the pizza location and everything. It was kind of Pizzeria Mozza-esque. So
I thought you hated it. Or were you just snarking about it because you like to snark about San Francisco?
Oh, no, I was just quoting from a movie, Dan. Are you familiar with the movie, little movie called Inside Out?
I'm familiar with it. It currently resides on my DVR.
Oh, Dan, you should watch it. It's not as sappy, goopy, lame as you probably think it is.
No, I didn't think it here was lame. I heard that everybody cries when they watch it. Probably not you, because, you don't like have emotions and stuff.
I cried.
Oh, well, then
after
I'm
you see it,
in holding off for now.
After you see it, I will definitely discuss with you the exact moment that the waterworks hit the fan, as it were.
The waterworks hit the fan. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So, no, I fully intend on watching it. It's just not always in the mood to cry in my house. Also, I would lose very important moisture currently, and then I would probably be dehydrated and pass out on the floor if I tried to watch it in my house right now.
Well, you need the moisture.
Moisture is important.
Water is life, Dan, as they say in Dune. But I don't think you got to that part. you were just up to the sand.
Who can even remember?
Yeah.
It's terrible.
The movie? Or just like the fact that you don't remember?
Oh, Dune, the movie.
Oh. Oh, well, you didn't see the whole thing. It got Got really good at the end. It didn't.
I'm sure
it was pretty much the same throughout.
Sand monsters and stuff.
Sand worms, Dan. Sand worms.
Whatever. Large worms can be classified as monsters as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. It's the difference between Frankenstein's worm and Frankenstein. So.
Now that's a euphemism, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just imagine the jar they got the brain from said abnormal on it. So, Anyway, I don't know where... I blame the Sudafed.
Yeah, we'll blame all this on Sudafed. You want to start over? Good week? How's it going? How was WWDC?
It was warm, and I got to meet people, and I was hugged.
Did you install all kinds of betas?
I'm sick.
What do you think of the WatchOS 3 beta? How's it going for you?
Oh, well, you see, the thing I'm most excited about is the dock and the complications, because I really believed in this product since the beginning, and it's nice to see that it finally came to fruition. And that so many people are going to get so much joy out of using it sometime next fall after the new watch device is released, which will be fancier and nicer than the ones that people already own.
Mm-hmm. Something using the leftover RAM because they overshot the thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you always gotta overshoot your RAM because they are known for leaping. But then once you overshoot your RAM, then you're still on a mountain and you got nowhere to go up but up.
The leaping was the Intel thing, not the Apple thing.
Oh.
You don't remember that, do you? Their former tagline?
No.
When they rebranded, their tagline was Leap Ahead.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was the tagline they rebranded with in 2006. Didn't last very long.
I guess it's better than Make.Believe. But,
Wait, is that,
Sony.
Is that Sony? That's right.
Sony. So it was, oh man, what a brilliant marketing campaign that we all cherish and think fondly of.
A lot of people are doing that thing where you do the period where it pretends to, it like makes a sentence and then like has multiple meanings. Like Wrangler, that's real period comfortable jeans. Because they're real and they're real comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah, these are real jeans.
Uh-huh.
Not none of those fussy, phony, like, I don't know, acid wash or whatever the kids are doing these days.
Rip jeans, Dan. And I saw some really fashionable people with the jeans that are ripped at the knees again. Remember that trend? That was a great trend.
I think you did that in like fourth grade.
Yeah, well, it kind of came and went, because I think there was a brief period when it was a boot cut and also torn at the knees. That would last for like 6 months. So hopefully
that was kind of the affliction era, wasn't it? When everything was like bedazzled and sort of distressed.
Yeah, and you had the weird sort of like flaring iron cross bird motif on everything. it was amazing. What a time to be alive.
This is a very embarrassing time to be alive.
Mm-hmm. And if you watched Real Housewives of Orange County, you saw a lot of that in All the Husbands.
Why would I watch any of that?
I don't know. It was a thing. It was a pop culture thing, Dan.
No, it was not.
Why does anybody do anything? There's tvOS. Isn't that exciting? Aren't you excited about that? You love
did
it.
Did you install it yet?
Yeah, I'm sure you installed it. You ran right out and did that, didn't you?
Well, I don't have one of the things.
I know that was like the joke where you said that the watch thing about me because I don't have. Yes. See.
But I have one of the things, just one of the older things.
Yeah, but it's not on that thing. It's on the other thing.
Well, you know what else isn't on the thing is Amazon Prime streaming.
Yes. Yes.
I'm trying to segue us.
Sure, we can pull out of this nosedive.
Unless you legitimately installed the Apple TV beta, in which case we can talk about it.
No, because I was like not here, so I didn't do it. But I kind of want to, because I joked on Twitter a couple times, like, how could it be worse? Zach Sachi Gigi Sachi, I'm really bad with last names, everyone. I don't do this as a shtick.
I think it's Zachifanakis.
Mm-hmm. Mem. And so he was tweeting up a storm because he installed it on one of the four that he owns because he's...
A masochist?
He has it running, and he was like, oh, no, it's really unstable, and now it's not playing video. And I was like, so what's so different from the current one? Ba-dump. It seems like that is not, like... user-friendly, but one could expect that seeing as how it is a beta. But like I've said many times, there is no way to restore state, so if you decide, hey, I want to scope this out, want to go adventure here, and then quickly hop on back over to the way things were before and resume my Amazon Prime streaming viewing on my Apple TV, then you can't do that. And I was joking about that last thing, but you can't just revert to things. So you're kind of on the road for the rest of the beta process, or you get to wipe your device, which that's fun, because if there's one part about the Apple TV experience that everyone loves, it's setting it up. And that concludes that. Speaking of things that you can watch on a television and over the internet, we can now talk about another piece of technology. And that is the magical reboot of RoboCop, which was out in 2014.
Magical. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was magical. Remember when everything was getting a gritty modern reboot?
Uh-huh. And do you know what didn't really work so well in this?
Like all of it? What do you mean?
Yeah, everything. But yeah, the gritty modern take on it.
And honestly, it wasn't even really that gritty.
No, it was not.
They somehow made Detroit look like less crappy than the first RoboCop.
Yeah, because it's Toronto. But the original one was parts of Detroit and parts of Dallas, Dallas looked suitably industrial for their purposes.
Nothing good ever came out of Dallas.
JR something, Matt Alexander. But, he doesn't listen, so I don't know why we make these jokes. And neither does Casey, and neither does Mike, so...
Matt claims he listens or he subscribes or something. He's really far behind. He's just been really busy lately.
Yes, I can attest to that because when I met him, he was typing on a thing.
Was it an iPad Pro?
No, it was a MacBook Air. And he was typing up a storm, and he was kind of doing that thing where he like looks at the screen and then like looks away, and he's still typing. And it's sort of like if you're in a movie and you see somebody typing, like they don't care.
Was he looking off into the distance, sort of whimsically, or was he looking at you?
Just like into the distance. I think there were like some sports games on. So anyway.
Were there people kicking a ball on the grass?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that's happening right now.
Yeah, or the hoops. I can't remember.
Oh, the hoops. That was important. I watched the hoops.
Oh, did the ball go in the thing?
The ball went in the thing, and the Ohio team won their first championship in history.
Oh, great. What's the Ohio team?
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh. What was the other one I was hearing everybody talk about? It was the Cavaliers and the blah, blah, blah.
Golden State Warriors. That's the California team that everyone there in San Francisco would have been rooting for that lost.
Oh, was that Eddie Q's team?
Yeah, that's Eddie Q's team.
Okay.
Sorry, Eddie.
Sorry.
He's going to be so heartbroken that he's not going to be able to make TV or music deals for weeks.
Yeah. I don't even want to think about what it does to Apple Music. But so the RoboCop movie with its gritty modern reboot was something that I watched last year out of curiosity. Because we had just done our episode, I had viewed RoboCop 4, our RoboCop episode, the original RoboCop, and I believe I said at the time that this reboot is not so good, and so, you know what, I stand by that statement after my second viewing, and I don't really think it's that good. I think they kind of botched it in a lot of ways. And we can go into all of them, but basically, like, at every turn, they made a giant mistake.
Well, I would like to hear your thoughts on all of the various twists and turns, because it really honestly could have been a lot worse, I think. And while they certainly, like, lost a lot of steam, especially at the end of the movie, and it just kind of, like, fizzled out like a firecracker that's been in a drawer too long or something. It was not as bad as I thought it was gonna be. Maybe it's the heat getting to me or something. But all of the moments where they tried to make a reference to the original RoboCop were terrible. Really, really, really terrible. Like, they did it in the worst possible way with like the least amount of energy that they could possibly put into the references. It could have been worse. Like, could have been a lot worse. Could have been Fantastic Four. It wasn't.
No, well, you know, it's a fair point. It has certain moments, particularly those involving Gary Oldman and his character, that stand out as somewhat interesting. Michael Keaton is not very... Well, he's not well directed because he's kind of just like eating scenery left and right and sort of maniacal and wacky, and it's not really like locked down enough. He's supposed to be sort of like an unhinged Steve Jobs kind of person, and it doesn't really work because he just comes across as like manic Michael Keaton. And then you got another notable performance from Samuel L. Jackson, who shows up to collect a paycheck.
Why is he in this movie at all? Like, what? I mean, I guess the device of the narrator is used to move things along in a number of places. But he's a narrator, and then he's like a part of the thing, talking to Michael Keaton in person, and then he's at the end there. And I don't know why he was there.
No, I
other than just to like explain things.
No, it's. He's there. There was I don't know if you remember the news anchors from the original movie, but that was something that, you know, sort of anchored the film.
Oh, right. So this was just another bad reference then.
Yeah. So this is sort of taking that and turning it into the modern equivalent of like the O'Reilly factor. It's the Novak element. And he gets a weird stage to walk around on and just kind of gesture at what I assume are holograms or are blue screen things on a sound. It doesn't really matter, but
it's all multi-touch hologram stuff. And then apparently whatever year in the future this is, it's well beyond. Does it say what year it is? Because he makes a reference to the past of 2019 or something. But apparently whatever year this is, they're still using Arri Alexa cameras because that's what all of them are on his stage.
It's 2028.
Okay. So the Alexa's got a good lifespan then. 2028. It's good.
Well, By then, it's sort of a retro look.
Right. It's still they're still running on the old Sony S/S cards, though. There's a big S/S logo on the side of the camera right there when you first see it.
That is product placement that just went right past me.
They totally taped over the Arri logos and the Sony logos, but it still said S+S in the little card slot area.
Ah, exciting. So, yeah, this movie starts off rather clumsily with this sort of... It's like they were going for a satire kind of vibe like the original, but it's not satire because it's not like really working all of the angles here. It's kind of lazy. He just kind of drops exposition and cuts away to action that's happening elsewhere and then says, and this is why we need to do the thing, and then cuts away. And so it's not...
The whole thing kind of feels like a thought experiment of like a... The whole movie is like a giant what-if question. Like, what if we had this technology, and what would the rules be, and how would we govern it? And then what would happen if there was some flexibility in that? And then what would happen after that? And then, like, two-thirds of the way through it, they're like, oh, I guess we should put a movie around this big what-if statement too, right?
Yeah, it's just... Wow. There's more than that in terms of ideas in here, and I think that might be another problem that the film has, is that it's trying to execute on a few different things. You have it sort of updated to this level of questioning the morality of drone warfare, but then also like doing really clumsy, like, you need humans there for the importance of humanness, and it's I don't understand the point of that. It doesn't quite sell me on a critique of drones, and it doesn't quite sell me on a critique of selling weapons, and it doesn't quite sell me on a critique of police corruption, and it doesn't quite sell me on a critique of rehabilitative ethics or anything. Like, I don't understand what they're really going to go for here. There is the relationship with Alex and his wife that is explored here rather than in the first film, where he kind of just his wife leaves him after the accident, and then he spends the rest of the time with this sort of romantic involvement with his partner, and I say that in very loose terms, like they're not actually like intimate or anything, but they have a very thorough friendship, and she is of course played by a woman. And then in this movie his partner is a man, and there is no none of that going on. They went more with the wife route, and so it has like a different vibe there, but it's not really like a critique of like her or the relationship they have, or like how he wants to protect his family because he's like brainwashed at some points in the film. So it's just a kind of a mess.
It's kind of a by the book, like this company / government agency kind of thing duped you into letting you do this to your husband under some false pretenses because you were emotionally compromised and you wanted to save your husband or whatever. So they just like, they're the bad guys, they duped you, and then, oh no, you're gonna be over there for a while and not talk much. But the only way that this is sort of any sort of reflection or critique on like things that I've actually seen is they use basically that same argument that you need a human involved to like, they took out most of the photo radar cameras in Arizona at one point. I don't know. Some of them are back. The red light ones are back. But the speed cameras, they took those out because they have they lack subjectivity. And they need some sort of human in there to just not like willy-nilly write tickets based on a camera. So that was kind of sort of the only thing that I could parallel this to in the real world. Other than that, it's just like, look at this. We've got robots and they can kill suicide bombers that have no motivation other than they're going to be faceless bad guys in Tehran. And it was very, very much a, like, what-if straw man question. Again, like, what if there's terrorists and they want to blow stuff up? These robots can take them out really fast, so there's no loss of life. And, you know, maybe a kid runs outside with a knife because he saw his dad just get mowed down, and then this giant robot kills a little kid who was holding a knife. But that's just the price you're going to have to pay for being safe in this world, apparently.
I would have preferred when they had the Senate hearing later on, shortly after this, as a matter of fact, where Sellers, Michael Keaton's character, is talking to the senator that they could have had a back and forth about the ethics of the action that we had just seen, rather than just a theoretical question of, oh, what if it shoots a kid? And
what
it's
does the
like,
robot
well,
feel?
Yeah. It's just so hippy dippy, and it doesn't. And I mean, you know, obviously, I'm on the side of human equals good, robot equals not good. But at the same time, this is not setting up a valid critique of these two positions. It's not saying that these robots are ineffective, because obviously not. They wouldn't be able to lobby for this program later on in the film. But then it's also
it's cut and dry. If you are against the robot program, that means you want police officers to die. It's basically their argument. Like, cops never have to die again if we put these robots out there. But it's like, well, there are other implications at play here.
Yeah, and there is also weapon sales that are going on rather than drug sales. That, you know, are such a big part of the earlier RoboCop series, that it really is sort of weird that they didn't pursue a critique of the ethics of, like, gun ownership and gun control and things of that nature, the militarization of police forces. None of that is really covered here. It's just sort of like, our military robots will crush everything. Yay!
They could have done like the company, the evil greedy company is going to sell these robots to the police, but then really rich people could also buy their own personal robot to defend themselves, and then robots for everybody.
Yeah, there's also, you know, there are things going on just 2 years after this movie was released, in that time span. Where, you know, the militarization of police forces and regulations around the sale of guns, etc., are very hot issues, and they have been for several years, and they are this week. And so it's weird that this movie sort of completely misses that and is instead critiquing sort of drone warfare. But on like your home turf, and it just, it's sort of like hollow and doesn't really work for me.
Yeah. But, just like in the first one, we've got the do-gooder cop who, gets, nearly killed by some bad guys who actually turn out to be bad guys / corrupt cops. And then, tangentially, this organization is really looking to put their robot tech to work. The government has outlawed the robots to be used as a police force because people don't like the idea of robots killing people. So they decide, like, well, we'll stick a human in a robot, and then people will trust a human, even if it's just a human face, and then we can totally override the robot with his programming and his brain because we still control like all of his stuff. So we'll trick everybody into letting us put a partial man, mostly robot thing out on the street. And then when they warm up to that idea, we'll sell lots of robots and stuff. Because once they see how good he is, then they'll see that he's somewhat fallible from time to time. And then, we've got our in.
Yeah.
And that's basically the story.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, because then they also go through
politics, kind of like fake politics and back underhanded, like, you know, deals under the table.
Yeah. And there's a nice scene here with Gary Oldman trying to teach someone who has lost limbs how to use them and how he can actually, you know, be a better person than he was before in terms of being able to play and do these things that he couldn't do before. But he gets very emotional and worked up about it because it's not really a part of him. It's something else. And, you know, it's a nice complex scene in the middle of, you know, all of this other nonsense. And
you mean the guitar scene?
Yeah. And, you know, they go back and forth on that. And then we go to Michael Keaton and then it's just like, you know, oh, I said I wouldn't build weapons for you, but what if I gave you a way to fund things and help people? Mwahahaha. And he makes his deal with the devil, where he's gonna do that, and then they sit in the boardroom meetings, and it's just like, oh, this one isn't right. This isn't the right candidate. And this one looks great. He'd be ideal. And then it's like, you know, we're not making soda. It's interesting, because you'd think he, at this point, if he was really, like, on board with the ethics, he would have given up. But apparently, Michael Keaton and...
At least he didn't say, if we do this, we do it my way, which is, you know, it was close enough.
I mean, basically. I mean, because... what is it? Liz Klein in the scene when Murphy blows up. She's all like, you know, it's, you know, I'm afraid time is something you don't have. Blah, blah, blah. It's just like, oh, God. Did you just like.
Very get, scary line to say.
Did you just get the cliche book out and then just like, oh, here's one. And then you dropped it in the film. Anyway, it's clunky stuff. But you know, that scene ends and it's obvious they don't have a candidate. Who will it be? There's this weird flashback police action that has taken place with them talking to the chief about the bust that they did on this guy that went south on Antoine Vallon, and you know everything went sideways, and that's why his partner Lewis is in the hospital, played by that guy from The Wire. I never saw The Wire, by the way, so don't.
No, neither did I.
Yeah, don't send us letters. We don't care about good stuff. We're just gonna watch this. And so, the guy from The Wire gets shot, and he's in the hospital. And the police chief's like, "Oh, this is reckless. You shouldn't go in and do things." And you know, we could do things, and blah blah blah. And it's like, yes, this really was reckless. Like two guys, and you're going up against arms dealers. What is going on? And you also get a glimpse of Joel Kinnaman's inability to. Be a fake tough guy, because he's much better at acting surprised and shocked and robotic than he is at the part where he's like a fake gritty police officer. It comes off as pretty phony. And the
you mean where he's pretending to be an American, pretending to have a Chicago accent, pretending to be tough.
Yes,
he's quadruple undercover or something.
Yeah, he's not going to get a quadruple Oscar for that. That's for sure, and he didn't. So. Joel Kinnaman not really selling any of that in that scene. There's the hospital visitation, and he goes home to his wife, and there's the kid, and blah blah blah, sexy time, and then it's like, oh no, the car alarm's going off, and then he goes down, and then there's an explosion, and the camera just lingers on the aftermath of the explosion. It's rather shocking and dramatic.
Why was the long flashback slash, partner getting shot thing even really in there, other than to sort of say like, hey, we're investigating this one guy, and
it was to set up Antoine Vallon as the heavy that he needed to confront, whereas, you know, the first RoboCop, you had a different heavy that you needed to confront with the guy from that 70s show, and
Red Foreman, yes.
Yes, and so this is the parallel to that.
Red Foreman's scarier. They should have brought him back for this one.
Yeah, Patrick Garrow, sorry, guy, but meh. It's very underwhelming. Action scenes in flashbacks as part of a police debriefing is not an effective tool. The scenes with Antoine Vallon... ultimately are rather bleh. We go on to the aftermath where they're consulting with the wife because they have this candidate now, and they're trying to get her to agree to this, and you know all of the damage that's been done to him, and it's rather gruesome. And this is where, you know, Liz Klein is all like, yeah, so you got to do this right now, right away. We're on a timetable here. She's like, okay. And then 3 months later, title card, which is also not a great title card because it's like mostly a black screen with like in the lower corner, you're going to write 3 months later. Just like, you got a whole screen, guys. You don't have to do like Futura over everything by any stretch of the imagination, but you could try a little harder.
Futura is pretty popular these days.
Yeah. Queens. We get
China.
Yes, we get this interesting lab thing and the dream sequence. And I like the dream sequence dissolve with the rotating thing. I usually don't like rotating camera stuff, but the way they shot it, in terms of the way things are dissolving in and out, works for me, in terms of this sort of in terms of putting us into the surreal headspace that he is in terms of what he conceives of as reality. So I thought that was interesting, at least.
More cool looking.
Yeah, more interesting than Lungs in a Jar. But so he...
You didn't like the Lungs in a Jar?
No, it's so stupid. But anyway, they...
It's interesting, though, what we could do with the visuals. Like, they could have done this stuff in the first RoboCop, and the idea that they could, like, peel his pieces back and just show, like, all right, here's what's left, and then we're bolting everything on top of that. I mean, while that is not really... I mean, you know, modular designs are very popular because you can replace parts individually and continue to upgrade your devices. Not super safe or secure for somebody who's got lungs in a jar.
No, nor a plug and play hand. And so that hand is so ridiculous. They have him wake up and he's in a silvery suit, which is reminiscent of other RoboCop suits that we have seen in the past. We have the scene with Gary Oldman where he tries to explain that he's in an accident and then very clumsily finally gets around to the part where his body is mostly a piece of metal. Alex doesn't deal very well with this, and then he runs out of the room and through the factory, and there's all the tactical stuff which comes on from the adrenaline, presumably. The assistant Kim is all like, can we shut him down? And you know, Gary Oldman's like, nope. And then, can we shut him down? Nope. Can we shut him down? Nope. Can we shut him down? Nope. And he runs out into the field. Can we shut him down?
I want to see what's going to happen. Like, again, the whole thing's a thought experiment. What if we built a robot guy? What if he got loose? What would he do if he couldn't cope with his reality? And then, like, what if he escaped and, you know, started running through a rice paddy? And then basically, you know, at that point, you run out of what ifs and you just turn him off and then cut to the next scene.
Yeah. And then they try to get him to deal with the situation, and it's like, oh, I want to see blah, 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 and, you know, lungs in a jar. I don't like that scene very much, and I think that it's sort of ridiculous to the extent that things are just sort of, like, chopped up and placed there, that it kind of detracts from the seriousness, if it's supposed to be serious, because it's not satirical. We're supposed to really be feeling for Alex Murphy in the scene, and so it's just sort of on such a gruesome and like Mars Attacks level that it's kind of weird and takes away from some of the drama.
At least he had that thing around his face to make the roto easier for people who were doing all that work.
For people who are not aware, they did not actually sever his head. He was. He's fine.
Saying that wasn't those weren't practical lungs in a jar?
No, he's okay.
Did you happen to notice that when he first escaped and started running down the aisle of whatever sweatshop that was, that his, like, right when they went from a close up to a wide shot, his run cycle got really, really simple and basic looking?
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything too terrible, but this is a Sony Pictures movie, under the Columbia brand. And it was a big tentpole blockbuster prospect for Sony. It bombed, but it was supposed to be a big deal. And they, instead of going with their in-house shop of Sony Pictures Imageworks, went with Method. So, you know, there you go. You got Method. And well,
that one particular run cycle is the one that stuck out to me more than anything else. But there were a lot of other things that were a little weird. Like most of his, like, robotic servo noises when he moves his arm and stuff are like the sound of like a robotic servo that's like in an alarm clock that has like a little duck on top of it or something.
Oh yeah, that's not Method. That's the sound designer being like
right. Yeah, so I'm not mostly
overzealous.
I'm not critiquing all of the visual effects as the bad part. I mean, there's some decent looking stuff, especially in his suit, although a lot of the suit is practical. And I heard it was very uncomfortable in the lower regions. I think I heard him on a podcast, but yeah, the sound design is equally laughable at times.
Yeah. But anyway, he's like, hey doc, so kill me, unplug me from whatever's keeping me alive, and then you know, tell my wife that I died. And he's like, oh, well, she's going to be really disappointed. Not as disappointed as everyone else is, but she's going to be really disappointed. He's like, don't you want to, you know, after everything you put them through? And it's like, Gary Oldman, you're being a tad manipulative at the moment. It's unclear to me whether or not he really was feeling for Alex as part of this situation and really wanted him to commit to staying alive, or if he was just like, I spent a lot of time on this, and so please don't just, like, croak, because I got to do it over.
I spent 3 months on this. You're going to make Q2 of this year tank if we let you die. No, I think in that particular scene, he was actually trying to be a little bit hopeful, because he spends his time, you know, building prosthetics for people and stuff. So he's like, come on, they've got hope that you could one day be, you know, alive and in their lives again. But, like, you would think, if that was his goal, he would have built something that wasn't quite Terminator-ish, and they, like, you could maybe, like, a robot-sized body that you could put clothes over and, like, maybe sort of kind of pretend that you're not a giant Terminator.
Mm-hmm. I mean, totally normal life. But, yeah. So...
Nobody's going to stare at him walking down the sidewalk on his way to the ice cream shop with his family.
Yeah, especially not in a giant military suit that's always on him. He doesn't even get, like, civilian robot parts, you know?
Yeah, like a nice khaki look, maybe like a flannel.
Yeah, some dungarees. Some Wranglers. So he's
they're real comfortable jeans.
Yeah, but you can't do the ripped at the knee ones, because then you'll see all the robot stuff. But the mm-hmm.
It'll give him away.
Yeah. As opposed to the rest of his head. But they're like, yes, you are always going to be a militarized police tool for us. So this is your look. It's been market tested and stuff, and it's yours. And they do these tests with the Omnicore drones, where they try to measure his efficiency, and it's not really going very well because the robots are faster at making targeting decisions than a human mind is.
That whole part was ridiculous. They're like, look how slow he is compared to the robot. He waited 5 whole seconds to make a decision. It's like, well, the outcome was exactly the same, so who cares?
Yeah, but, you know, the drone trainer, the drone whisperer, Rick Maddox, played, of course, by Jackie Earle Haley. He was probably mostly known for... Yeah, mostly known for Watchmen. He favorited one of my tweets one time. He is in this film, I blew him up in the other films, but I didn't blow him up in this one because he's fine. He's absolutely fine. Nothing bad happens to him. He's the trainer, and he's very against the RoboCop program, for reasons that are, I don't know, unclear, because threatens his job security or something. I have no idea. And so he's got his opinions, and he's very happy to see that the guy just lags behind.
The weird thing about his drone whisperer position is that he somehow has, like, sign-off authority on whether or not RoboCop gets to leave China, which is, like, if you're the guy who's supposed to, like, compare him to the robots and train him and stuff, I don't think you really necessarily have the authority to, like, keep a technically living man from re-entering the country and seeing his family and stuff.
Yeah, there are enough bad guys in this film that you don't really need this added complication.
Who's the baddest of the bad guys?
The guy who gets shot on a helipad. But spoiler alert for the end of the film. But
he shouldn't have gotten shot because he had his red bracelet. Yeah. Remember, people with red bracelets never die.
Mm-hmm. It was an important plot point in the Samuel L. Jackson exposition dump at the beginning of the film.
They really underutilized that comparison to the first movie, didn't they? Because, you know, the whole, what was it, like, the hidden
directive
4 or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, the hidden directive 4, you know, you cannot harm an OCP employee. That isn't utilized here. It's about these physical items that... somehow bind someone to this. It's weird.
Am I alone in expecting that, like, in the part later in the end there where he knocks out knocks Rorschach out, who's because he's wearing like a you can't shoot me bracelet. I thought he was going to take the you can't shoot me bracelet and like give it to somebody else, but I guess that wouldn't have really helped because he already took out the four big two-legged robot-y thingies, whatever they're called, and then like there wouldn't be any other robots to protect him from.
Yeah, the redesigned ED-209s. It doesn't really matter because it's not, doesn't really the final assault scene doesn't make a ton of sense. But they override his actions with drone programming, but make him think that they are his actions so that he doesn't feel like a disembodied person. And I assume skirt some sort of legal technicality behind this. But they do that. And this increases his efficiency. Unfortunately, this, you know, is making him less humid and more like the machines and more of a brutal killer. And so whatever. And then he has, you know, some emotional feelings later, and they go, hey, you know, that thing that you did before, with the robot programming, just do more of that. So that way he doesn't botch this for us. And then, so they do that. And then he behaves kind of like how RoboCop behaved in RoboCop 2.
Yeah. Talking about poor planning though. They're like, well, we have a press event where we're going to reintroduce you to the world, but 10 minutes before that, we're going to upload an entire database of criminal activity to your brain just because, you know, I guess we're like in a hurry or something. We had a spare 15 minutes, so we're going to do that. And, you know, it might give you a meltdown, but who knows? I mean, we'll just futz with your brain right before you go out there instead.
Yeah. And then
they could have just waited until after the press conference.
It would have been a better option. You don't really want to like update your devices right before you do your keynote speech, they did, and so he, you know, then is like, hey, I'm gonna use my motorcycle and I'm gonna go bust some crime, and then there's just crime busting, and
it's a cool motorcycle,
yeah, and then there's the whole thing with, you know, keeping Clara away from the husband, and oh no, you're not behaving right, and this is so suspicious, but I can't really talk to anybody, but I'm going to eventually, and I'm crying. She eventually manages to confront Alex and, you know, it just dumps on him some emotional trauma from David's, their kids' nightmares. And this, causes the narrative device of emotions overriding programming to step in.
And there's a convenient percentage bar that's going back up to show that how much of his emotions are returning to him.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lick of sense.
He's already at 30% emotions. We've got to stop him before he gets to 100% emotions.
Yeah, remember in episode 4 when we had the human progress bar, and it was just like the number of people left alive, and it was just a progress bar. It's just like progress bars communicate quickly and efficiently to the audience, yes, that one thing is getting bigger or smaller, and unfortunately, it's always ridiculous.
So this episode is going to be called the emotional percentage bar.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we can try a little harder than that. And so the
the people who made this film didn't.
No, it's so lazy. But they have the whole thing with like they're gonna get the Dreyfus Act repealed and blah 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 blah. This is all about getting the drones deployed now because he's got his little wedge in to be like, hey, drones aren't so bad because we made this horrible cyborg, who's sort of assaulting crime left and right, and. It's so weird, but they have the corrupt cops who get busted and the Valen thing, and this busts the chief of police, and you know that's what gives them the impetus to you know, finally deploy all this stuff because the police are all corrupt and, you know, see, you can't trust people.
It's like that never came up before in the Senate hearings for the Dreyfus Act. Like, well, We can't do this because people are better. But wait a minute, cops can be corrupted? I had no idea. It's time to repeal the Dreyfus Act. I guess we finally realize people can be motivated by money.
It's definitely never happened before in the history of police departments, and certainly never been hot button topic that has led to several movies before this. But this movie is just skates right past it. I mean, it's a bit of a twist from the original film, in which the police chief he's a stand up guy who is just trying to do right with the resources he's got, and he's gonna bust everyone's butt until it buttocks. Anyway, they're busted to go bust, and that's what they do. But they, you know, and here the police chief is portrayed differently in a twist. The police chief is evil, because we needed that too. And this is where you get all of the stuff with the robots, and they get to deploy things, and blah 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 blah. There is a moment where Clara goes, and you know, she's, you know, furious that she needs to see Alex, and this is where Michael Keaton's like, oh, so sorry about that. We'll definitely let you go do that. Definitely. Now that I have everything that I wanted, destroy the cyborg. This is a conflict, because Norton realizes, you know, I don't really like killing people that much, and I kind of like people having control of their emotions and their bodies and making free decisions. So maybe I'll undo all that horrible stuff that I did in the middle of the film. And he lets RoboCop out and reprograms him so he can escape just as it goes under lockdown on his motorcycle. He's out of there.
He pretty much just ejects his transmitter chip. Just really quickly hits Command E when waking him up, so that Michael Keaton thinks he's dead because he lost transmission, but he's not dead. And then he wakes him up just in time to shoot the two guys coming through the door with machine guns who came to assassinate him, which is apparently the combination of Gary Oldman saying, they've come here to kill us, and then seeing the two guys holding guns is all the evidence he needs to charge Michael Keaton with attempted murder. Because he tries to go all like, I'm going to be cop guy again and take you down for attempted murder. Which I'm not sure that would hold up in court, because he was sleeping. And Gary Oldman was basically just like, they're going to kill us. Wouldn't like a detective be like, are you sure? Maybe you did something wrong. Anyway, but he just hops on his bike and then takes out everybody outside Michael Keaton's office, and then jumps his motorcycle through a window and starts wrestling with the giant robots, and gets shot up a lot.
Yeah.
But the other thing in this movie that drives me nuts is how many times they go, 50 caliber or above, use that to kill him. That's what you got to do, is use 50 caliber or above to get through his armor and stuff and shoot him in the head, and 50 caliber and above. It's like, oh my God, we get it. He's vulnerable to large arms fire. Just stop it.
Yeah, I think you could just start shooting him and then it would kind of make the point. But they are lazy and are afraid that the audience won't understand. And I'm sure that probably came out of a test screening where somebody from the Midwest was like, hey, you know what? I don't know why the bullets from that one thing could shoot him and it could hurt him. And they'd be like, oh, we should definitely make that more clear. Mention it 8 more times. But the...
Well, it wouldn't be the Midwest, because those are red states.
Oh yeah. They'd probably understand. and probably some liberal mother from Santa Monica being like, I don't understand how any of this works. And to be like, yes, we'll fix the movie for you so that you can go watch all of this horrible, violent stuff. So anyway, test screenings. He beats up all of these 209 drones, which look weird and plasticky. And
also gets some help from his old buddies who, what does his wife go? No, does Gary Oldman go get them? And then they're like, we gotta go help them. So let's get in our car, just drive through the window, and then you won't see us again.
Yeah, police to the rescue. The non-corrupt police to the rescue, and Lewis is there.
Also, we just put your hands up, and the robots won't shoot you because they won't kill you if you're unarmed, because that's how they're programmed, or at least that's what you need to believe, because there's no way they could have reprogrammed these robots to do anything else, in spite of the fact that they own them.
Yeah, it really seems like a very, very poorly thought out plan. Also, a bit of a red flag that the police department does not actually have any of the red transmitters, so they themselves don't get shot by the drones. It seems to be an area that was overlooked in the deployment of the drones. But you know, you can make an argument that Sellers probably just doesn't care if he shoots up the police department, as evidenced by the fact that he shoots most of the police department. And there's the conflict with the, you know, the ED-209s, the ED-209s, which is just like a complete disaster. He's just like jumping on them, leaping from 209 to 209, ripping
he does
things out.
The Starship Troopers thing where he shoots the hole in the top of one of them.
Yeah, and you pull up stuff, and you make them shoot the other things with the things and the bombs and the grenades. I don't know. There's explosions. It doesn't really matter. they fall over, go boom. They go meet Maddox in a hallway, and he's got his bracelet. And then Lewis is all like, I can shoot him. And, you know, there we go. It's not really that important because we don't really have any close relationship to Lewis in this film because he's mostly not in it. And then Murphy, you know, all by himself goes to the roof, having learned the fact that he can't fire on any OCP employees that have the little red things, doesn't evaluate whether or not that might be a possibility when he gets to the helipad, but, he's up there and surprise. Situation has unfolded in which he is not supposed to shoot Sellers because of the thingy, and Clara and David are hostages, which is totally the logical step for this CEO to take. It is not at all weirdly out of character and cartoonish at this point that he's...
Because Jay Baruchel, who's in this movie for some reason, said that if she sees her husband is still alive after we told her that her husband is dead, then we're done for, which who knows what that means. But then they also try and play it off like, no, the human part died, but the robot part's still alive and attacking everyone. And at least his wife at that point kind of just rolls her eyes and goes, I don't think that that's true. And then He just walks away and says, I need to take this phone call, which is about the best he could have come up with.
Yeah, I have to go return some videotapes. So this is ridiculous. I mean, I assume that Jay is referring to the fact that they would be in legal trouble if she were to go to the press, and that it would undo all of their undoing of the Dreyfus Act. And so they don't want her to do that. But
he's just a marketing guy, as he says. So, you know, hands up.
Yeah, the mustache twirling helicopter escape, I'm going to shoot and kill everyone thing just seems so out of left field that it's hard to believe.
But how great was it when the helicopter was like coming around and then he points the gun at him and they're like, oh my God, that guy's got a gun. Quick, fly away. The helicopter just leaves.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. But Sellers is gone. He's dead. Because that's what you really want in justice, is to just murder people.
He tried to have the police officer murdered. He said he was going to kill his family and there was nothing you could do about it because he's got a red bracelet. So he basically, you know, tried to kill like three people. he still had his gun in his hand. And then RoboCop like made some creaky noises and eventually figured out how to like tilt his gun at the right angle to shoot him. Like he never did like internal monologue, emotions overriding programming, can now shoot bad guy kind of thing. He was just like, he like crouched down and like tilted at enough of an angle that his elbow didn't need to bend anymore, and then he just shot him.
Yeah, and then we get the end of the film where the project is shut down, the president vetoes the thing, and then you know, there's the whole clumsy, like, oh, everything's going to be fine now because you're okay. And, you know, Sam Jackson's there to be all like, no, now we're never going to be safe because of this thing. And it's like, well, I don't really understand what Novak is tethered to at this point in the film, because he's not really, like, he wasn't part of the Sellers conspiracy necessarily enough to be removed in the plot unfolding, but he's somehow there at the end to cap it off. It's a very peculiar choice. And
he's just a loon who believes in robot guards.
It's, yes. He believes in the National Robotics Association. hot button issue. But they go through the thing where he says that, and then we're done. And then that's the thing. That's your wonderful movie.
Yeah, there's some lines about he may, some cell phone footage caught him, and he may be back with us sooner than you think, which is basically like, he'll be back for a sequel sooner than you think, but he won't because this movie did terribly.
Oh, yeah, this bombed hugely.
By the way, did they spend all their money on outsourcing the visual effects so they couldn't afford tripods in this movie or something?
I have no idea. The budget was $100 million.
Every bit of it is shaking violently. Every bit of it. There's no still shots. Even the crane shots are shaking violently.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone was just really chilly because you said they shot it in Canada.
In Toronto, yeah. And there are several times in the course of this film where some accents come in from some of the lesser characters who are in the background. Because, as you know, you get money when you cast Canadian talent in things. So all of the people like the Pentagon general and some of the police officers and stuff, they're there for credits. Not for credits, but credits, tax credits. Isn't that fun?
That's how they get you.
Fun thing to think about.
They start with the tax credits, and the next thing you know, there's robots walking around with guns.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Slippery slope is what I'm saying.
So this was a total waste of a film, and I, you know, this.
And yet, I maintain it could have been worse. Right? Still could have been worse.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. It's like you're given some really amazing, wonderful bread. And then you're like, okay, so this is amazing bread. And everyone loves this bread. And
is it Cuban bread?
Possibly, in this metaphor. Let's just say it is Cuban bread. And then everyone's like, oh, this is such great bread. And then for some reason, a person comes along and is like, you know what? I got to put my own stamp on it. So he replaces the magnificent Cuban bread with ciabatta, and it's still, you know, it's a sandwich, and then he stuffs it with a dry pork tenderloin, and then you're like, you know, you messed up my sandwich, because now this isn't the RoboCop that I wanted. This is a different RoboCop that you put a spin on and is not as good. It is a lesser RoboCop. It's still a RoboCop, but it's not as well executed.
If you call it a RoboCopano, it's not quite the same thing.
Oh, you're fired.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We didn't even go over all of the like other references that were done terribly. Aside from the plot references with the like, you can't kill the OCP. There's, I don't know what it was in reference to, but he said the
I'd buy that for a dollar.
No, he said the opposite. You wouldn't buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. See that. That made me upset because in the original, it's there as a reference to the nonsense that is on television, which is dumbing down the minds of the American public, blah, 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 blah. People will just laugh at anything, consumers, etc. But in this film, it's not really in there for anything other than the line. And that's unpleasant. I don't really care for that at all. It comes across as really ham-fisted, just a shameless grab for the reference. Now,
wasn't there also a Dead or Alive? You're coming with me.
Yeah, but you know that's fine. I that's you don't really need a license to say that. You know, you don't need a license to kill. That's a different franchise. But that works out okay. Like, I don't object to every single reference that they made. I just object to the ones that are just, like, not there for any purpose other than just this sort of lazy, like, oh, yeah, remember that thing? That bugs me.
They didn't have any cars with silly names.
Yes, the SUX, was it SUX 6000?
Something like that.
Yeah, haven't seen it in a year, so I might have recalled that incorrectly. But so the cinematographer for this, since you're such a huge fan, he did RoboCop 2014 and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2014, so it was a busy year for him, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows 2016.
Is that the one that came out like a week ago that I didn't realize had happened?
Yes, it was about a month ago, I think, and it did not do well. Poor Paramount.
I was surprised that they made a second one. Did the first one actually make money? Did people enjoy that?
Apparently, enough to make a sequel.
So everybody got over the weird noses thing?
Apparently. I mean, except for the fact that nobody showed up for the second one, so you could interpret that to mean that, you know, fool me once, opening weekend on you. Fool me a second time, never gonna opening weekend me again. So there's that.
Well, there was another more attractive CG animal for everyone to go see.
Yes.
Wait, I haven't seen it yet. Planning on seeing Dory.
Yeah, but that wasn't the same weekend.
Well, all right, it's like a week after. Whatever, like, 2 weeks after. Who knows?
I think it was like
something
three.
Like that.
Anyway, it doesn't. I guess you could just say like in the month of June this happened.
Yeah.
I want to see Finding Dory. I think I might have suggested this before, but Finding Nemo and then Finding Dory is a little back to backer there for the thematic element of it. It's got glowing reviews, which you can't say about every Pixar sequel, but it is well regarded and full of heart.
Yeah, and I also want to see it because. Unless something changed, they're gonna show my dumb thing before that one too.
Oh, is that really your measuring stick for whether or not you're gonna go see something?
Well, that's one of the motivations.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Also, I want to see Nice Guys again because that movie was good.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
So. Yeah, it was good. Okay. Gosling, Russell Crowe. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling's great.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hang out with him.
Uh-huh. You want to party with Ryan Gosling?
I do. I just want to like have lunch with him or something.
Okay.
Or like I see him out at lunch, I just want to sit down at his table and then like watch him give me those weird stares and those funny faces that he makes in the movies.
Well, I think if you just sat down at his table out of the blue, you certainly would receive a funny face.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe he would like throw a bowl of salad at me or something. That'd be funny.
Sure. Hilarious.
I would laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right up until the part where I got dragged out by the police.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It'd be really distressing.
Oh my God.
I'm Pat Novak. Good night.